entertainment, sports, and radio's best guest list. Live from the Zone Radio Studios on Broadway on WZON Z62, WKIT HD3, and at downtownwithrichkimble.com. This is Downtown.
Well, hello there and a good morning. Happy Easter. It is Sunday, the first day of April 2018. No April Fool's tricks for you today. We're not going to hide any Easter eggs on you. Nope, we're just going to be right up front with some great conversations, some recent conversations here on the Best of Downtown, brought to you on this Sunday morning by Cross Insurance, where security meets strength. Guests of the program are heard on the G&M Family Market phone line. They're on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden, and every day from 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. Rich Kimble here, along with Kerry Haskell on this Sunday morning. Happy Best of Day to you, sir. Anything special planned? Little Sunday brunch maybe in your future?
Oh, yes. Well, I'll be making my grandmother's traditional deviled eggs. For some reason, she only ever made deviled eggs on Easter. So
wow.
That's my big plans for the day.
Now, how deviled, how spicy are your deviled eggs, sir?
I zip them up quite a bit, yeah. Nice.
I like a good deviled egg. Funny, I didn't like them as a kid at all. I love them now.
Yeah. There's nothing beats them.
I will say, about the time we're off the air, I will celebrate with a little, perhaps a Bloody Mary this morning. Kick off a brunch routine.
That's a good way to kick
one
off.
Well, they're all fine ways. So whatever you're doing, we appreciate you making us part of your day. We've got a great lineup for you this morning. We talked with Alice Cooper about, among other things, his appearance tonight live on NBC, Jesus Christ Superstar, the live concert with John Legend, Sarah Bareilles. Should be great tonight. Alice Cooper in it. He'll talk about that, his radio show, his career, and more. Dave O'Brien with some Sox talk as the season gets rolling. Colin Fleming with a little jazz insight on Miles Davis and John Coltrane and their relationship and what they did together as recording artists. And we get things rolling this morning with our friend John O'Hurley. John, of course, you know him from as many years as Jay Peterman on Seinfeld. Great friend of the show who is doing terrific work, as always, in Downtown Madness. Recently dethroned his buddy, the reigning Downtown Madness champion, Bryan Cranston. We talked about that, as well as tonight's broadcast, Easter Sunday, second year in a row, that the Beverly Hills Dog Show will be broadcast at 6 p.m. on the USA Network. And we covered that and more as we talked to John O'Hurley on Friday's Downtown.
Rich, how are you? How good to talk to you.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you. It's good to have you here in your old stomping grounds in the Northeast. You were back in Providence last night, huh?
I was doing a concert last night at the Twin River Casino and doing a little filming today, and then I had a wonderful conversation. I was over with Larry Lucchino, the head of the Red Sox, today. So it's been a good day for me.
Well, so were you telling him everything's going to be okay after the way things went in their opener yesterday?
Yes, he needed to be held.
Well, and you're just the guy to do it.
That's what I went up there for. No, listen, he felt the same way that I did. I think they're firing on all cylinders this year. I saw the best team I've seen in a long time last night on the field. And regardless of that one inning, which the spokes fell off, it's still a great team this year with a lot of promise. I love what I'm seeing, and that's the reaction that the management had to as well.
Well, it's just great for us to have baseball back after this long New England winter we've gone through.
Yeah, we didn't think that baseball weather would ever come return, did it?
No, but finally here, and we're ready to get it rolling. Well, also being Easter weekend and all, we're very excited to have a chance to tune in this Sunday night for the second broadcast of the Beverly Hills Dog Show presented by Purina, 6 o'clock Eastern time on the USA Network. And, well, you've got the band back together again, David Fry, Mary Carrillo,
yep.
Tara and Johnny.
There.
It looks great.
I tell you, we've had such success with the NBC show on Thanksgiving Day, the National Dog Show. We got, 30 million people watching the show. But the idea was that let's put something up that's even more fun, that we can have even more control over and really have, and let's call it our own. And lo and behold, we have the Beverly Hills Dog Show. It's a dog show done differently.
Yeah, for anybody who didn't see it last year, what makes it unique, this particular dog
well,
show?
Well, it's first of all, it's a lot more, it doesn't have that kind of staid feel of a normal dog show. It's a lot more fun, and a lot more celebrities are there. We have uh, uh, we have actually, David Fry, my co-host, and I have redesigned the Best in Show ring, and it looks like Victoria's Secret runway. So it's a lot of fun. We have a good time with it, and we have 1,300 of the best dogs in the country. They're going to be there.
Now, one of the people here in the station asked the question, and well, I have to do it. I have to be a responsible journalist. Have any of these dogs in Beverly Hills had work done?
Very good question. Yeah, we have a no cosmetology. There will be no cosmetic surgery, but a very, very good question. Yeah, those cheek implants are a telltale.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And especially the puffy lips as well.
Well, we've talked about the chemistry that you and David have and the whole crew, and it's a wonderful broadcast of Thanksgiving and for Easter Sunday as well. You pretty much own the holidays. Is this part of your master plan, John?
It really is. And then I'm going to Rosh Hashanah and then we're going to finally end up with Arbor Day. We're going to have everything under our menu.
I look forward to the Arbor Day special. I know that's going to be fantastic. Your movie is still hearing great things about it and rave reviews from folks who loved your role in Swing Away. That was a big success for you.
Yeah, it really was. You know, for a small independent film, it was the little film that could. And it's done so well in independent markets, and we've really been very proud of it. It's just nice to be part of something that develops its own little, you know, its own kind of, it develops its own audience. And, you know, we're not a big studio film. It's just a fun little film. I'm actually heading back to Greece to do another film.
That's fantastic. This is, I don't know, is this your manager doing this or is this you? Because it's brilliant.
Well, you know, it's very funny. It has nothing to do with anybody, really. It's just I've stumbled upon these, apparently the Greeks can't do a film unless they have the Irish kid in it.
We're talking with John O'Hurley here on Downtown. Well, you've also had, once again this year, tremendous success in our annual contest, purely for fun. There is no wagering for people to vote for their favorite guest, Downtown Madness. You have surged through the entertainment bracket, beating Curtis Armstrong, Carl Reiner. You were not kind to your elders. You defeated him thoroughly. And then dispatched with Bryan Cranston. And
oh, no, really? Oh, dear.
Yeah,
oh,
and
dear.
I have to play a little clip for you. Bryan was on a few months back, and, well, here's what he had to say when we told him that you had beaten him last year to be our Downtown Madness champion. You took the crown away from John O'Hurley, who had won the previous year.
Oh, boy. That's fantastic. Anytime I could defeat that man, I shall take it.
Well, revenge is yours. You have knocked him out of the running.
Yes, it is. It tastes so good, revenge.
Well, and now you're up against a guy you've
best served cold.
Oh yes, and you're up against a guy you've worked with before, Stephen Tobolowsky.
Oh, one of my favorite people. I love Stephen. You know, Stephen and I have done. We had one of the, you know, right before I killed a series, right before I went on to Seinfeld, the night before I was on our last performance of A Whole New Ball Game. He and I were there together on that show on ABC back in 1994. And we had, I think, one of the funniest shows on television. Unfortunately, we didn't, the audience just didn't think so. But we had, I think, one of the funniest casts and the funniest shows. Stephen and I were together, and I just love them. We've done a little bit of work together ever since. We did a film together called Christian Mingle about a year and a half ago. We were both played eccentric people, but we've had a lot of fun together. He's what a great and inspiring mind he is.
Absolutely. And we mentioned your show, your one-man show that you performed in Providence last night, A Man with Standards, that is a chance for you to explore the great American songbook, but also relate stories from your career.
It is. Yeah, it's been fun. I wrote a show a couple of years ago, and it's had quite a bit of success. We were nominated for best. I was nominated for best show in New York recently, and you know, it's touring around the country and doing very well. I have a lot of fun with it. And it really is the stories of my life underscored by the music of Sinatra and Henry Mancini and, you know, the other greats of that time. And that's the time that I grew up in. It's called A Man with Standards because it, you know, does the period of the standards. And then I was lucky enough to grow up around men who had standards, gentlemen.
I was looking ahead at upcoming birthdays in the entertainment world, and a woman that appeared in Seinfeld with you, who's still going strong, the wonderful Estelle Harris, turning 91 years old next week.
Didn't that something? Oh my goodness, was she great? Absolutely, just a legend. I tell you, the two sets of parents on Seinfeld, you couldn't recreate a more identifiable and lovable group of character actors.
What's amazing to me, now that show, of course, is still in reruns everywhere, and it's been 20 years since Seinfeld went off the air, and yet it's every bit as timely as ever. It hasn't lost a thing.
It really hasn't. Still shows in 85 countries, and you watch the show, and it's as timeless as ever. The only thing that dates the show is Jerry's little cordless phone.
That's right. That's the size of a brick. We remember those days.
But it's funny that everything on Seinfeld is still it's still relevant today. It's always, it was a show about 12 people on an elevator that could only fit 10.
John O'Hurley, this Sunday night, the USA Network, the Beverly Hills Dog Show presented by Purina. It would not be a holiday without you around. And, John, it's always a treat for us to have a chance to catch up with you.
Oh, well, it's nice to be back. Nice to be back home for a few minutes in my home state.
And hope you get back. Are you going to get a chance to come back to Vermont this summer?
I'll be back in Vermont. I hope to make it over to see the Sea Dogs play there as well.
Fantastic. John, we'll try and catch up with you then. Thanks, as always. Happy Easter to you and your family.
And God bless you, Rich. Thanks again.
It's John O'Hurley talking with us here on Downtown about the dog show from Beverly Hills tonight, 6 o'clock on the USA Network. When we come back, a little Red Sox insight from Nesson's Dave O'Brien. This is Downtown on Z62 Retro Radio.
At Quirk Motor City, you get a huge selection of quality pre-owned vehicles priced to fit any budget. Plus, the Quirk Motor City pre-owned difference, with a limited warranty that's 3 times longer than the average dealer's pre-owned warranty. Free main state inspections for the life of the vehicle. A free Carfax vehicle history report. And Quirk Motor City's certified pre-owned 118-point inspection. It's your quality pre-owned car. Find it at Quirk Motor City in Bangor, Belfast, Augusta, and Portland. View our pre-owned inventory online at quirkauto.com.
It may not be prime biking season, but it's always a good time to make sure your cycle is in great shape. And there's only one place to go to do that. Slipping Gears Cycling, 753 Stillwater Avenue in Bangor. Bangor's only full-time cycling sales and service experts. They offer outstanding service and a huge stock. Make sure you like them on Facebook to get updates, shop in person or online at slippinggears.com.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Bennett Auto Center is the place to go for full-service auto care. From oil changes to engine jobs, they can handle your every need. Stop in at 24 Thatcher Street in Bangor and talk with the experienced local people at Bennett's. They offer great service, competitive prices on a wide range of tires, and best of all, people you can trust. Visit the website for more information at BennettAutoCenter.com. Give them a call at 947-0351 or drive on in to Bennett Auto Center, 24 Thatcher Street, Bangor. We're back on the Best of Downtown, your Sunday morning. Brought to you by our friends at Quirk Motor City Used Vehicle Center, locations in Augusta, Bangor, Belfast, and Portland. It's your car. Find it at quirkauto.com. Well, the Red Sox season got underway Thursday, and on the eve of opening day, we had a chance to catch up with and preview the season with the voice of the Red Sox on Nesson, Dave O'Brien.
We are coming to you from Tampa Bay over here in actually St. Petersburg with Red Sox Day, and a beautiful day. Not that we could care less tomorrow. It doesn't matter what the weather's doing because we're going to be indoors and can't wait to get started for opening day. It's a very, very exciting ball club. What the Yankees did, has revived, I think, this rivalry to a new level that we haven't seen in a long time anyway. So I can't wait to get started, really.
Well, absolutely. And not that the wins matter much in the Grapefruit League, but it's been a very good spring training for this team.
Yeah, I think so. And I think over and above, as you mentioned, 22 wins. Red Sox won more games in the spring than anybody. That and a couple of bucks will get you maybe a cup of coffee at Starbucks. I think that at the end of the day, more than anything, Rich, what matters is it was a smooth camp. The Red Sox didn't have any injuries. There were a couple of scares late, one Chris Sale, one Rafael Devers. They're both okay. They're both going to start on opening day here tomorrow afternoon. And I think, what Alex Cora did as the new manager, he was able to back up the workload for guys like Sale and Price and Porcello and the other pitchers, hoping to have them fresher later in the season and hopefully deep into October. And I think he accomplished what he set out to do, and there's a real good feeling coming out of camp. And, you know, when you talk about wins, losses, maybe they don't mean anything in the spring, but it's a whole lot better to get into that habit of shaking hands at the end of the game than not, which they did in March.
No doubt about that. The pitching staff, obviously the big three are very solid. Some injuries, but those guys, Pomerantz, Eduardo Rodriguez, Stephen Wright, those guys will be ready before too long. Is Price, though, the key to this rotation for them to challenge the Yankees?
I think you hit it. I think that's it. And, you know, maybe there are people out there who don't want to hear that because he wasn't the most popular guy in the world the last couple of years. But just you know, step back for a minute and think to yourself. The Red Sox are paying this guy $30 million a year. He was an ace when he got here. He did win 17 games and lead the majors in innings pitched his first year with the Red Sox. That was not a bad year. It was a pretty darn good season in retrospect. You would take that again. You would take it right now if someone said, that's what he's going to do. Sale's going to come back and have a representative year and you know, take what you get from everybody else. Pomerantz can win you 13 or 14 games. He doesn't have to win 17 games again. Porcello's got to have a bounce-back season. There's no question about that. Rodriguez has to live up to what he's capable of. But you're right. It starts really with Price and Sale. They're both number ones. They both have ace kind of stuff. I think David Price is the key to what was a very good pitching staff without him most of last year. The Red Sox were the number two ranked pitching staff in the American League, only bested by Cleveland last year in winning 93 games. So you add Price in there, throwing 94, 95, 96, like we saw him in the playoffs last year and what he's done in spring training, I think it makes it the staff to beat, perhaps, certainly right there with the Cleveland Indians in the American League.
We're talking with Dave O'Brien here on Downtown. Craig Kimbrel missed most of spring training, understandably so, to attend to the issues his daughter was facing. But he's back. Carson Smith is back. And this bullpen looks like it could be a real strength of the team.
Yeah, I think it will be. Kimbrel had a staggeringly good season last year. And I don't know why it didn't get as much attention, maybe because there was a bit of a hiccup in the postseason when maybe he was a little bit tired himself. But do you realize he struck out just a hair under 50% of every batter that he faced? I mean, that's historic. There are only a handful of pitchers who have done that in the history of Major League Baseball. He had two immaculate innings last year where, you know, it was nine pitches, nine strikes, see you later. And then, you know, after everything that he's gone through with his family, I think most Red Sox fans, you know, are aware his little daughter, Lydia, has gone through a couple of heart surgeries just born in the offseason and already facing a tough test there. But, you know, he's been able to come back to camp the other day and look like Craig Kimbrel and pitch the way he did all of last year. So, you know, you start there, and you mentioned Carson Smith. I mean, when he was completely healthy a couple of seasons ago before he had the Tommy John, he was as nasty as any right-hand pitcher coming out of any bullpen in baseball. And he's back to that again. He feels great about himself. I really do like the bullpen a great deal, and there's a couple of cute stories, too. I mean, you've got Bobby Pointer, the left-hander, who nobody was talking about. I mean, nobody was talking about when spring training started, and he's made the club, and so has Marcus Walden, who's 29, had one cup of coffee in the big leagues, never got in a game, and now he's made the Red Sox. So there's some interesting stories, too.
Dave, when you look at that offense, not many holes there, and they've got some depth, too, in some positions, particularly once Dustin Pedroia comes back. What do you think about the signing and the extension given to Christian Vasquez?
I think it's great. It was great for the clubhouse. It was great for the pitching staff. Those guys love him. They love pitching to him, and I think it was really important for that to happen because – he's the number one guy, and that's what that says, is Christian's the number one guy, Sandy Leone's number two, and Blake Swihart's a guy who can catch for you as well. He's also made the ball club. So I think Vasquez is a rising talent, and he hit 290 last year, and that surprised a lot of people that he handled the bat like he did. And throughout the spring, he was the same kind of guy. And I think what he did last year with actually a little more power is very capable. It was really very positive inside Sox clubhouse when he signed that deal.
Dave, before we let you go, is there a guy on this team, either in the pitching staff or on the offensive side of things, that you think has a good chance to maybe exceed expectations this year?
I think when he gets healthy, Rich, keep a real close watch on Eduardo Rodriguez. And he's got that knee healthy again. He's going to start the year in the DL, so that doesn't sound right, but it is right. He feels really good about where he ended spring training. And so with the upside on Rodriguez, Erod has the ability to be a top-tier pitcher. He might not be a number one, but he could be a number two or number three on a really good staff like this. I think his whole attitude is a little bit different this year. He realizes that he has to get it done, and he's ready. He's kind of embraced it, and that knee is in much better shape than it's ever been before. So to me, Eduardo Rodriguez, off of what he's capable of doing, is that guy to watch.
It's OB himself, Dave O'Brien from Nesson, talking Red Sox with us here on Downtown. When we return, we get all jazzy. It's your jazz brunch on a Sunday morning. Colin Fleming on Miles Davis and John Coltrane next on Z62.
Honey, what's all that barking in the neighborhood?
The dogs are saying something.
Let's listen closer.
You know, Green Acres Kennel Shop in Bangor is more than our home away from home. They're your pet food superstore. My owners have always trusted Green Acres Kennel Shop for the best price and selection. They carry a large variety of Nutrisource pet foods formulated with the best ingredients and made with integrity. Oh, they even have a rewards program. I save my owners money by earning points for every purchase.
We interrupt this message to bring you the cats of the neighborhood.
Meow. It's not all about the dogs around here. Don't forget your feline friends. Green Acres Kennel Shop is my parents' pet food headquarters. They buy me the best brands of dry and canned choices.
Well, dear, the dogs and cats around here know best. Time to make Green Acres Kennel Shop our new pet food store.
Green Acres Kennel Shop, Union Street, Bangor. Online at greenacreskennel.com.
We love Green Acres Kennel Shop, a home away from home.
Hi, this is Mike Toole. My company is ClearPoint Financial. We're an independent retirement plan advisory firm located right here in Bangor, Maine. At ClearPoint Financial, we provide guidance-based, comprehensive retirement plan solutions to companies that are concerned about their employees' retirement income security. We focus on plan participants. We help them strive to achieve retirement income security. We provide ongoing engagement, education, investment advice, and service that exceeds expectation. For more details on our financial wellness programs, call me today at 899-2552. ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Go Blue!
Sir, you're here for the cheerleading tryouts?
Yeah, for the class of 82. Gotta show my school spirit.
I know a better way. The UMaine Alumni Signature Rewards Visa Card from University Credit Union. Low rates, no annual fees, and it earns reward points for travel, merchandise, or cash back.
Woo, sounds easier than a backflip.
Apply online today at UMaineAlumniCard.com.
Federally insured by NCUA. Terms and conditions apply, subject to credit approval.
At this busy time of year, there's nothing better than a place that offers you one-stop shopping. That place is G&M Family Market on the corner of Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Fresh produce delivered daily, a great selection of meats and seafood, beer and wine, of course, a Dunkin' Donuts and an Amato's right on site. Stop into G&M Family Market every day of the week from 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, and if they don't have what you're looking for, they'll make every effort to get it next time. G&M Family Market, Route 1A and Route 46 in Holden. Back on the best of Downtown, seems right here for a Easter Sunday morning, a little jazz brunch on the program. Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Kind of Blue. We talked about that pairing, their relationship. You have got a couple of different pieces out right now on Miles Davis, John Coltrane, Jazz Times, the cover story, and a terrific piece on the Daily Beast as well.
Yeah, today it's like you're the band leader in our little setup, and I'm the tenor man. But yes, those would be pieces on, well, one is a box set, the Jazz Times one, about the final live recordings made, any recordings really, with John Coltrane, Miles Davis over in Europe, and then the Daily Beast piece is on the nature of musician autobiographies and how there tends to be really no middle room. They're either rubbish, like a horrible commercial, kind of like, and then we did this, and this album came out and reached number two, or they're pretty virtuosic in terms of their writing, which I think makes a certain kind of sense. And specifically, Miles Davis's autobiography as the best one ever written by a popular musician.
And you say a big reason is that, is not often the case in these musician or entertainer autobiographies, there's a clear voice in Miles Davis's writing.
There is a very clear voice. In fact, I was at the symphony the other day over at Symphony Hall, and a friend was there, and he buttonholed me in the hallway, and he said, wait, isn't Miles Davis's autobiography just him telling everyone how great he is? There's kind of a lot of that. But I think there's a very close relationship for musicians between something we've talked about in the past, sound and sense. I think you could also say the same thing about John Keats, Rap Scott Fitzgerald, the way that their language possessed the musicality. So in this instance, we're sort of working from the other direction towards language. And Miles Davis definitely had a lot of voice. He had a lot of voice as a writer. He had a lot of voice were you to meet him. He had a lot of voice as a trumpet player, as a composer, as a trumpet player who used a Harmon mute in a way that gave his voice an extra element of voice, but yeah, lots of voice with this guy.
And an intensity, too, you mentioned, that you don't often find in these works.
No, there's like one incident where he is riding in the back of like some car with some socialite type of woman, and they're going off to some awards ceremony. And she says to him basically, oh, why are you here? What have you done? And he responds by saying, okay, white lady, I've basically reinvented music like 7 times, which is true, because he's one of those people like a Picasso, a Melville, a Dylan, an Orson Welles, Beatles, where they don't have a sort of stylistic calling card that we can point to. He did like cool jazz in the late 40s after having been a part of the early bebop movement. Did modal jazz later, did kind of a post-hard bop after that, did jazz as chamber music, fusion, electro-funk jazz, and the whole white lady thing, he could have been sitting with the Hamburglar, and he would have taken its head off in the same exact way. But yeah, he was, one word I used to describe him once was virulent. He was not someone who would maybe excel in PC culture, but I think like politically correct language is often a cover up for intellectual a sort of deficiency, really. And he was a plain speaker because he had a lot to say.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Let's discuss the piece in Jazz Times on Miles Davis and John Coltrane, the final tour of the bootleg series, and the relationship between Davis and Train, which was, not always a smooth one between those two.
No, it frequently wasn't. Some of that was because of drugs. If you've had someone with drugs in your life, you can love them to absolute pieces, but it can be a little tempestuous at times, to say the least. And Train struggled with that. He was kind of an unknown musician when Davis took him in for what became the first great quintet. Davis had two. The second one happens later on in the 1960s, completely different personnel. And Coltrane was a Davis acolyte. I think Coltrane picked up, though, even more from Thelonious Monk. And by the time they get to the spring of 1960, which is when these recordings date from, Coltrane does not want to be in Miles Davis's band anymore. And Davis, this is big for him, because it's his first tour as a leader in Europe, and that's a huge deal, it was at the time, as a jazz musician. And Davis had had his own problems with drugs. He had to save his career, essentially with a solo at Newport in 1955 on a Charlie Parker number. So he just wants this to go well. Davis was one of those artists who wanted to make a lot of money. Coltrane has already recorded, like, Giant Steps, Blue Train. He's doing his thing, and it gets absolutely crazy on so many levels on that tour, as you hear on these recordings.
And you point out in the piece, too, that at one point you can even hear audience members discussing and maybe even arguing about what they're hearing.
Davis was sort of a shaper of sound at this point. He was learning, and I think Coltrane was essential for him with this, how to basically be a writer through listening to what the people in his band were doing. So he would kind of take their ideas later, shape them, almost like an editor slash writer. Train is at the front of the stage, and he is performing a kind of musical tray panning. Like, he is boring into your absolute skull to let the pressure out and let his sound in. And you hear, for instance, like in Paris early on, people do not know what to make of this. They're talking, they're booing, they're yelling, you hear them shuffling around because everyone is uncomfortable. And Davis is thinking, what's going on here? This isn't really how I want my tour to go. Train doesn't want to be there. It's very much like the premiere of Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, or if you've ever heard like an early 1985 15-minute concert from the Jesus and Mary chain, it's on YouTube, or Dylan at Manchester Free Trade Hall in the spring of 1966 when someone calls him Judas. It's a lot like that. And the intensity, the sort of ferality, is unprecedented in jazz to that point.
You talk about the gig they did in Copenhagen late on this tour, and Davis kind of let Coltrane do his thing. Was that maybe the best work Coltrane did, better than some of the work he did when he was by himself?
I wouldn't say so, because it's almost like when you are training for something, you might just go hog wild on your workouts and everything, but they're not very reined in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Coltrane is having that crazy, mad practice session, like in hockey when you skate killers and you go goal line to blue line, back to goal line, then goal line to red line, and on and on and on until you do the other goal line. He's basically doing that on stage. It is a torrent of notes. Like, he is overwhelmed by how much music is coming out of him. And it's really interesting, too, because you kind of have, like, almost like a hockey setup. You have these two studs on the first line. It's like having Crosby and Malkin, right? And then you have Wynton Kelly, who was this block soloing, block chord soloing pianist, meaning he would have these chords right underneath the melody on the hard accents. And Davis is occupying sort of like the offbeat. Coltrane's above everyone. Jimmy Cobb was the perfect drummer for them because he swings. So he's adding that component. And then you have Paul Chambers, who is a very versatile bassist, kind of going along with the mood of what everyone else was doing. So it actually cohered, but someone got to Davis and Train after the early shows and said, look, you can't be doing this. This is nuts. Like, it's amazing theater, but the punters are playing the money and they want the chamber jazz. Scale it back a little.
As you look at this time together with Train and with Miles Davis, how do they rank with some of these other partnerships in the history of jazz?
Jazz is fascinating to me because I don't know of a musical medium where a duo, a partnership, means more. You have collaborations, of course, in everything, really, and certainly throughout music, Lennon, McCartney, all that, Richards, Jagger. But it's not quite the same. A lot of times when you have people who write together in rock music, they don't actually write together. They write separately, and then they kind of vet each other's work. Partnership is a very real dynamic of jazz. So you have, like, Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, Lester Young and Billie Holiday. And one that I really like is Eric Dolphy and Booker Little. They made marvelous recordings in the early 60s together. Both men died, like, tragically early. But this dynamic between these two is perhaps the most impactful in terms of shaping the history. Even when they are apart, you have the feeling that they are partners in a way. Even after Coltrane dies, because during this period, in 1960, Coltrane is very much the dark mage, like the sorcerer out in front, albeit with acoustic music. Later, Davis will be the dark mage at the end of the 60s when he's doing fusion. He has electricity to bolster his sound, but I think even after Coltrane's death, he's informed by Coltrane. And the way that Davis would write with that second quintet where he's letting Wayne Shorter do his thing and Herbie Hancock do his thing and then shaping the overall sound. I think he learned that from listening to Train in 1960 as Train was at the front of the stage doing his wild stuff.
We were talking about another great jazz partnership the other day with Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, and that was Chet Baker's work with Jerry Mulligan.
Oh, yes, West Coast jazz, those two. And, you know, I sometimes see Chet Baker maligned for his singing, which is absolutely crazy to me, because a lot of times people can be real hardos with jazz singing. They want you to have just an extreme amount of range, and I don't think you necessarily need an extreme amount of range. I think it's more how you deploy your voice. But yeah, that's another one. But the entire history is just littered. Duke Ellington, Billy Strayhorn. And some people have like multiple partners because these careers, I mean, Duke Ellington, you can sort of go through his career and say, well, that was this marvelous bassist, that Jimmy Blanton, that he overhauled sort of what swing music went. And Count Basie has a partnership with Lester Young, just one of my favorite tenor players. But in terms of the modern era, in terms of sort of bending the music to a shared creative will, Davis and Train were two musicians who couldn't be in a band, I don't feel like, for a very long time. It's almost like Davis was a sculptor, and he has his marble in front of him and the chisel and the hammer, and he's going at it, and it's coming out well, and boom, the arm pops off. And then it starts to grow on its own, and it's in the same room, and it's Coltrane. It's separate, in the same room, kind of like gesturing to each other, but not really a part of the whole, and maybe now is the time for us to go our separate ways because we've done enough here.
Check out Colin's two pieces on Miles Davis, John Coltrane, The Daily Beast, and Jazz Times. And next week, very excited about this, you've got a short story that is about to be published in Harper's. I can't wait to hear about that.
It is in the issue of Harper's, my friend, just out, the April 2018 issue, and took a while to get that one. They only published the 12 short stories a year, so it's a tough road to hoe. And you, as a teacher, can bust out all of your professory type of questions.
I look forward to it. That'll be next Tuesday, right here on Downtown. Thank you, Colin.
All right, thank you.
Colin Fleming talking jazz with us here on Downtown, your Sunday morning. When we come back, a slight change of pace from jazz to Alice Cooper. He's got a lot going on. Radio show, live broadcast of Jesus Christ Superstar tonight on NBC. Alice coming up next here on Z62 Retro Radio.
When it comes to your health, early detection is the best protection. That's why the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center provides 3D mammography to offer better answers and greater peace of mind, identifying problem areas that a standard mammogram might miss. It provides precise images for all women, including those with dense breast tissue. Call 907-1682 to schedule your 3D mammogram at the St. Joseph Regional Breast Care Center. 3D, providing peace of mind for you, your family, and your loved ones.
Since its founding in 1954, Cross Insurance has grown from a small family-owned agency that started in Bangor, Maine, into one of the largest super-regional insurance agencies in New England. With a network of offices throughout New England, Cross Insurance works with top carriers to provide maximum value to you, your family, and your business. We are proud to be the official insurance broker of the New England Patriots and would welcome the chance to provide security for your team. For more information, visit crossinsurance.com. Cross Insurance, where security meets strength.
Angelo's Pizzeria has locations in both Bangor and in Hamden, and they're your home for the best pizza, homemade pasta, and Italian takeout. Angelo's Pizzeria, located on Hammond Street in Bangor and Main Road South in Hamden, features a menu that also includes seafood, sandwiches, wraps, and salads. That means there's sure to be something for every member of the family. Stop into Angelo's Pizzeria, Hammond Street, Bangor, Main Road South in Hamden.
There's only one way Hartley's Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Newport does business. The right way. Owned and operated for over 60 years by the Hartley family, Hartley's offers the same or even better prices and discounts on vehicles as those offered at mega dealerships. And along with that comes their renowned small dealer service and exceptional attitude toward you, their customers. Hartley's values your business and your trust. You're never pushed, never pressured. No one will chase you around the lot, but no one will ignore you either. Hartley's wants you to feel comfortable at their dealership. So feel free to look around, and Hartley's professional sales staff will always be there when you need help. You'll like the place, you'll like the people, and you'll like the way they do business. The right way. The folks at Hartley's wouldn't do it any other way. Always remember, if you're out there looking around, the best deals aren't in the city, they're in the country. Hartley's Country, at the Triangle in Newport. You'll always be treated the right way at Hartley's.
Your home should be your sanctuary, the place that keeps you safe and warm in the winter and cool and dry in the summer. The people at Penobscot Home Performance want to make sure your home is safe, healthy, comfortable, and energy efficient. They take a big picture view with practical steps and use their experience to ensure that the space and systems in your house are working better together. Contact them today for a free energy consultation by visiting PenobscotHomePerformance.com. Back on the best of downtown Sunday morning, Rich Kimball, Carrie Haskell. Here with you, our next guest has been making music for nearly 50 years now. Member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You hear him every night on our sister station, WKIT. We had a chance to catch up with Alice Cooper recently and talk about his remarkable career. Well, and we're so excited to have your show on our sister station, WKIT. Nights with Alice Cooper is such a fun show. First of all, great music. You have such an encyclopedic knowledge of music. How do you go about picking the songs that you play?
You know, it's one of those things where I understand that there are certain songs that, you know, that are kind of like the 40 or 50 greatest FM songs, you know, that you play. But I don't want for people to forget bands like Paul Butterfield or the Yardbirds or the Hollies or the Who or Them, you know, bands that that don't get in that top echelon. And I grew up with all these bands, so I know. It's almost like you could say any band, and I'll tell you a great story about them, because, you know, we've been on the road for 50 years, so you kind of know everybody, and it's just, you know, it's fun to talk about them, and it's so funny that certain guys and bands, I might be making fun of them, and you would think that they'd be mad at me, and they get mad if I don't make fun of them. Actually get mad if they say, hey, you quit making fun of us, what happened?
Well, that's one of the great things about the show, the stories that you tell. I mean, we've said often here in the station, Alice Cooper has got to know everybody in the history of the music business.
Well, I pretty much, you know, I mean, from the Beatles to the Sex Pistols, you know, I mean, it's sort of like you have a relationship. When you're in a rock band, you are in a fraternity with every rocker there, and you've either met them at award shows or at festivals or, on, you know, at O'Hare Airport or whatever. But you do have a relationship with almost every single band.
The newest album, Paranormal, is in so many ways a classic Alice Cooper sound to it, but he also got some impressive folks together with you, some of the old band members, some great guests, and also reunited with Bob Ezrin.
Bob and I, you know, Bob is sort of my George Martin. He's always been the guy that I've worked with, and even when I'm doing an album that he's not producing, I will call him up and I'll say, I've got five songs here. Let me send them to you. And he'll listen to them and send back notes, you know, saying this bridge isn't strong enough. Why are you going to G here? Well, let's go to another one, you know. And he is sort of my guru when it comes to that. But I've done 13 or 14 albums with him. So, you know, I plan on working with Bob as much as I possibly can.
So excited for what's coming up on Easter Sunday on NBC. Jesus Christ Superstar live with, my gosh, what a cast, John Legend, Sarah Bareilles, and you as King Herod. How did this whole project come to you?
You know, I actually did the King Herod song on the original soundtrack. Tim Rice is a very good friend of mine, and the guy that did it before, he says, I want to replace that one. He says, will you do the Herod song? And I said, how do you want me to do it? And he says, well, I want Herod to be arrogant, and I want him to be creepy, and I want him to be kind. I said, okay, I can do that. So I did the song on the album, and then when it came up that they were going to do it on stage, you know, Tim said, Alice Cooper, got to play Herod. So it's fun. You know, learning the song is something now. I'm all day, you know, half an hour a day I sit and sing the song just to get it down. I don't know what the direction is going to be in it, but it'll be fun to do.
By the way, I absolutely love the documentary that you were such a big part of on your longtime manager, Shep Gordon. He's got to be one of the most interesting people you've come across in the music business.
I'm actually staying at his house right now in Maui, and we've been together 48 years and still have no contract with each other. You know, Shep is the guy, he's the ultimate manager. He's the manager that everybody wants. You know, anytime you can get a manager that you don't need a contract with because you know he's going to be honest with you, that's the guy that everybody's looking for. So we have a very different relationship than anybody else in this business. Nobody has that. 48 years with the same guy.
We're talking with Alice Cooper here on Downtown. I saw an interesting interview with you not too long ago talking about your friendship with Glenn Campbell. Now, that for some people might seem like an incongruous match, an odd couple of sorts, but you guys had an awful lot in common.
We did. We, you know, honestly, we both lived in Phoenix. Of course, I knew Glenn Campbell, from a lot of different aspects. We both played golf, and he was a very good player. We were both about equal when it came to, you know, our golf. We were both like 4 handicaps, and we played a lot of golf together. But Glenn was really one of those guys that could do everything. He was just one of those, you know, you put a guitar in his hands, the guy could play anything. He could play anything that my guitar players could play. He could play anything that, you know, you just name it, and he could do it. In fact, I had Eddie Van Halen one time call me up and says, can you get me a guitar lesson with Glenn? That's how well thought of Glenn Campbell was in the business. And, yeah, our wives were great friends. Our kids were friends. You know, I even went to a Seder, a country western Seder in his house.
Well, I'm trying
and
to picture
one
that.
One of us are Jewish, you know, but it was like very, very unique.
We had Bryan Cranston on our show not too long ago, and he was talking about the fact that having stability in his personal life is what's enabled him to be absolutely crazy in his professional life and in roles. And I wonder, as your life has settled down a little bit on the home front and you take good care of yourself, you're in great shape, does the same thing apply to you, that having that stability make it possible for you to go out and do the same things on stage that you were doing 40 years ago?
Oh, absolutely. And Bryan Cranston is one of my favorite people in the world. He is truly... He is truly insane and one of the greatest actors. I mean, the guy, he's got a very strange sense of humor, though. I don't know if you saw that thing he did on Sweet 60, his birthday party.
I did see that. It was great.
One of the funniest things I've seen ever. But anyways, the stability is really the bottom line on everything. When I was, you know, in my 20s, I was hanging out with Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix and Keith Moon and those guys, and yeah, the fact of getting to 30 would have been an accomplishment. You know, a lot of those guys didn't. They got to 27 and, you know, just burned out. I met the right girl at the right time, and the Welcome to My Nightmare show, Cheryl, my wife Cheryl, was 18 years old. She was the ballerina in the Welcome to My Nightmare show. And we got married the next year, and we've been married now 41 years. And the stability there is right. I've never cheated on her. She's, you know, our dads were both pastors. We're both Christian. You know, we go to church together and everything like that. Our kids are great. You know, we never had rock star kids that were in trouble. These kids were, like, very respectful, even though insane. Calico, my daughter, is an improv comedian. But never had a problem with drugs or alcohol or getting pregnant or anything like that. You know, never got arrested for anything. But totally insane. My son Dash has got his own band called Co-op, who are really good. These guys are really good. And he's got twin sons, Falcon and Riot, who are my grandsons now, 3 years old. And then my youngest daughter, Sonora, is a makeup artist. And, you know, she can do everything from The Walking Dead to Vogue magazine. So it's the most happy family you've ever seen. You know, we don't have a lot of stress in our relationships at all. And I'm doing what I get to do. I get to write songs, perform songs, and I get to play this character, Alice Cooper, that is really fun to play. And doing the radio show is just, for me, is just like I don't look at it as work at all. I look at it just as fun to do, you know.
Well, and what's great about that, too, is with technology today, you're able to do that from all over the world. I know when you were on your European tour, you were doing the show from there, now out in Maui. And that's going to make it not just easier, but fun and give you more stories to tell along the way.
Well yeah. And also, I mean, I give the credit. I'm not a big technology guy. You know, I'm more analog than anything else. But at the same time, it allows me, if you have Pro Tools, you can do the radio show from an airport. You can do it from a tour bus. You can do it from anywhere, and my show goes out to almost 200 stations around the world. I mean, we're on in Budapest. We're on in, you know, the strangest places in the world, you know, and yeah, I tape the show, and it takes, you know, I tape it 10 days in advance, and that way everybody gets covered. But, I mean, to me, again, I've been on 14 years now, and I never get bored doing the radio show.
You're a guy that so many people look up to now. You're a role model for a lot of people in the music business. And you hear people, critics sometimes and others, who say, rock is dead. What's your view on the status of rock music today, some 60 years or so into this genre?
You know, I don't think rock will ever be dead. I really don't. I think there's kids right now in a garage learning AC/DC and Guns N' Roses and Alice Cooper and Aerosmith. And I don't think rock will ever die because it's just too primal. And it's too much fun. I think you're going to see, I'm going to do a prediction right now, you're going to see a resurgence of the 80s hair bands, you know, because that era was too much fun. The Bon Jovis, the Guns N' Roses, the, you know, those, all those bands. You'll see, and it's going to be what I would call a revolution and a total rebellion against high-tech. Right now, vinyl is selling more than it's ever sold. Every year, vinyl goes up, like 71% or something like that. That means that kids are now tired of buying air. They're tired of streaming. They want to actually open an album, put it on a turntable, and put the needle down and listen to it and look at who wrote what and who played what. And I think as far as the state of it, as long as there's the Foo Fighters, as long as there's bands like Green Day, as long as there's bands like Black Keys, you know, there's a band in Ireland called The Stripes that I love, and The Strokes are great, and, you know, The Struts, another good band. Alice Cooper, Aerosmith, we're always going to play hard rock. I mean, that's just the way it is. I think hard rock's going to be pretty healthy.
What keeps it fun and keeps it fresh for you?
I never grew up out of it. I never, ever got tired of rock and roll. I never got tired of being Alice. I never got tired of getting on stage and doing a show and seeing the audience react to it. You know, I think you can't get tired of it. After 50 years, I get on stage now with probably the best touring band I've ever had and just rock the place. I think the people are now shocked more by the energy than they are than the theatrics. You know, and I realize that people come now to hear the music. They come to hear those songs, all those hits. And at the same time, they get the theatrics with it, and they get Alice, and they get the show. So what I've noticed is around the world is the first 50 rows are 15 to 25 years old.
And
they know every lyric. You know, I mean, that's great to get out there on the road and see, you know, 15,000 people there that know all the songs.
Well, Alice, we love the radio show. The new album is phenomenal. So great to have you still out there making music, and we really appreciate you making time for us here on the program.
Oh, thanks a lot. And, you know, my buddy Stephen King is there, you know, so he's still writing the best stuff. Did you see It?
Yeah, I mean, talk about another guy who's at the top of his game after all these years, much like you.
Oh, my gosh. His you know, his books, though, are like 5 inches thick. You know, if you're going to pick up a Stephen King book, you've got to, you know, decide, well, I've got 4 months in jail, so I might as well just read this.
Alice Cooper tonight, along with John Legend, Sarah Bareilles, Jesus Christ Superstar, the live concert, 8 p.m. on NBC. I got to check that out. There's my night. Watch our guests. Dog Show with O'Hurley at 6, Alice Cooper at 8.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Alice Cooper performance in Jesus Christ Superstar. That was always a favorite musical of mine. love that one.
Yeah, that's going to be great. All coming up tonight. Hey, thank you for joining us here on this Sunday morning. If you're so inclined and are celebrating, a happy Easter to you. If it's April Fool's Day, be kind. Be nice out there. Enough foolishness in the world. Don't go too far with it there. And we'll hope you'll come back tomorrow. We have a great Monday show lined up for you, talking about your music legends. How about Mr. American Pie himself, the legendary singer-songwriter Don McLean? He's got a new album, and it's good. Botanical Gardens. He'll talk with us about the making of that and his career as well. Nick Durba, Maine baseball coach. Alan Adams of the Maine Edge with movie reviews. Mike Lowe of the Portland Press Herald. Healthy Active Living Minute from St. Joe's Healthcare. And we'll release the final four, the funky four of Downtown Madness. By the way, you can still vote. Open on our website at downtownwithrichkimble.com. And the eclectic eight round of voting. Some tough choices there, but to go on and pick your favorite guests of the year on Downtown. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. We'll catch you tomorrow afternoon at 4 right here on Z62 Retro Radio. You're gonna be